Hi, David. I know it's a cold morning for you out there, but me ensconced in my warm basement, what are first things?
That sounds good. First things today is that at this point in 2016, which I know is the metric that is used by so many people because of the devastation of that loss and the surprise to many people, Clinton was losing her lead on a daily basis in key states. And you can track them across the states that shocked everybody, the Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania states. But also you can see it in the Florida, in North Carolina, in that election. It was shrinking on a daily basis. And people who were paying attention to polls, or data, I should say, more than just polls, we're also noticing a very clear trend in House of Representative races and how they were swinging towards Trump.
Was this preceding? Was this even preceding the Comey letter release?
It was slightly preceding Comey. Yeah, slightly preceding that. So it did not start with that, but it accelerated with that. This year, we're not seeing any indication of that. If anything, Biden's leads in these state polls, which are always the polls that I pay attention to, not the national polls, because we have 51 different state elections for the presidency, and we have 51 different elections for local politics, and we have 50 different ones that involve state politics in this country. They're looking better for Biden. He's picking up a point or two here or there, and he's certainly not shrinking. So I want to talk this morning about why things look better than they did in 2016, and why that is. There are never guarantees. We know that. However, there is an awful lot of data, especially with early votes already getting banked. That is suggesting that Biden and the Democrats in the House and the Democrats in the Senate and the Democrats in state level races are looking pretty good.
All right, let's hear it. That's hopeful.
I think that one of the main pieces that really, you know, isn't getting unpacked yet because COVID, the racial injustices of the Trump administration, have just overwhelmed people's senses. One of the main pieces is the way in which certain block of folks who did not swarm to Hillary Clinton, and in fact went the other way, are getting behind Joe Biden. And they're not qualifying that. They are not like blindfolding themselves and doing this. They are eagerly voting for Joe Biden, with the knowledge that they are going to have to work hard to persuade Biden on certain issues, or at least influence him on certain issues. These voters are best encapsulated or best symbolized by this particular person.
One of the things I admired about you is that you endorsed Vice President Biden, although you don't agree with him on every issue. What message are you sending there?
Let me be very frank. Not everybody will agree with me, but I think that Donald Trump is the most dangerous president in the modern history of this country. And it's not just because he lies all the time. It's not just because he doesn't believe in science. It's not just because he's a racist or a sexist or a homophobe or a xenophobe. It is because he is quite intentionally trying to undermine American democracy, trying to suppress the vote. We are a democratic society. People have fought and died to defend our democracy. And we cannot reelect a president who does not believe in the rule of law, our Constitution, or in fact, a democracy. I have known Joe for many, many years. He is a very decent guy. As you've indicated, he and I have differences of opinion on a number of issues. But I can vouch for his decency and his belief in the rule of law and democracy.
Now, there is a myth out there that Sanders did not campaign for Clinton in 2016. That isn't true. He traveled extensively and campaigned for her. But I think the reason that myth is out there is because there wasn't a swelling around him of the voters who had supported Sanders getting behind Clinton. There just wasn't. And so Sanders was out there, but he wasn't able to move the folks who agreed with him. And so it was the kind of, his voice was a lone voice and his followers didn't come. And Clinton ended up, you know, losing a small slice of Bernie, of voters in the Democratic Party who were Bernie voters. And they also went not only to Trump, which some of them did, they also went to third party candidate Jill Stein. There were more votes for Jill Stein in Wisconsin, for example, than Hillary Clinton lost Wisconsin by. So that was a really big problem in 2016. This election, there is not a main third party candidate attracting voters. There isn't. There are a couple on the ticket, but they don't have the same profile as Jill Stein. And second, the voters that Sanders speaks for have followed, have moved with him. I was about to say it followed his lead. I'm not sure it's following his lead. I think they've just moved with him because of the existential crisis for America that Trump and the Republican Senate represent. So in your own personal experience, have you seen or felt any of that sense of Bernie Sanders-esque folks getting behind Biden this election?
Well, I have seen it both in Iowa and in South Carolina personally, because when we heard Sanders speak, or we heard his surrogates speak, there was a undercurrent of respect, as Sanders laid out, for Biden's decency and integrity. And that when Sanders spoke in Iowa and spoke in I saw his surrogates in South Carolina, they carried that message across. They wanted Sanders to win, but they always kept their eyes focused on that larger question that Sanders had as well. And then, you know, when we were in Iowa, we had a little group meeting the night before we went home, where everybody had to take a stand. Who's your candidate at this moment? And I and one or two others, we were Sanders supporters. We thought Sanders was the most exciting, and we made the case for Sanders, and I made the case for Sanders as a viable presidential candidate. By the time we got to South Carolina, I made a political calculation that I thought, oh, he's going to be able to get beat up by Trump. This was all pre-COVID. He was going to be able to get beat up by Trump over his most radical associations. That the right would hit Sanders with that, and it would be an effective, in America, it's an effective tool to peel off voters. That's why they try to do it with Joe Biden today. It's just not as successful because Biden doesn't have that kind of reputation. So by the time we were in Iowa,
decided, in South Carolina.
Excuse me. By the time we're in South Carolina, I had turned my attention to a more moderate. And at the beginning of it, I was Amy Klobuchar. I argued for Amy Klobuchar because I thought she would really capture the Midwest in a way that would galvanize those voters, and that seemed like an important aspect, and that she would grab them. So I made the argument for her. So I shifted a calculation, made a political calculation. And then by the end of it, when we saw Joe Biden speak a few times, and by the last speech we saw Biden give, I felt real good about Joe Biden. I felt that he was able to put sentences together, that he was coherent, and he had his passion for decency and democracy, that was clear. That shined out from him. And so for me, it was less, at that point, less a political calculation than this is the Joe Biden who I'm familiar with and I can get behind. And there are policies that I hope come through, but you know, I'm old enough to know that political calculations are just that, right? And if you get half a loaf, If you get a quarter of a loaf, we're doing well. If Obamacare sticks around and can be expanded, that's a good thing for this country, for example. If somebody can take institutional racism and at least keep the focus on it and have clear policies, we're not going to cure it, but clear policies that provide people with opportunity, which is what Biden was talking about last night on 60 Minutes. He was making the case for finding ways to get wealth into the hands of people who haven't been able to build wealth in this country. You know, we start on that road, we're much better off. So there's my personal aspect to it.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. See, that's really helpful and enlightening to kind of hear that journey. On campaign, the presidential campaign, in those months of January, February, when we were seeing the candidates up close and personal in Iowa and South Carolina with other common power kind of travelers with us, I was completely prepared to support Bernie Sanders if he emerged as the nominee. And he certainly looked strong after the first three contests. And I was prepared to support anybody who emerged, but I had mentally gotten ready for Bernie. And then Biden swung it in South Carolina with incredible support among African-American voters. And it was a turning point, of course. And then Biden, just a few days later in Super Tuesday, swept most of the country on the Democratic side. And then a week later, swept again and became the nominee. At that point in time, the words that we heard from the candidates who stepped out of the race, Buttigieg, Booker, who had been out before that, but was very vocal at that time. Beto, same thing, been out before that, but was vocal at that time. Klobuchar, and then Warren, was that Joe Biden is a decent, good man, and that he will listen and he will take us forward in positive ways. And he heard it over and over and over again. And I talked about this in my lectures, about that consistency of theme about Biden. Decent person who cares about people, and he cares about the American democracy. And that has been enough in this moment, given who he's facing. So Bernie has been incredibly valuable in that. And I tweeted 2 days ago that Bernie Sanders is a patriot, and I appreciate all that he's doing right now. Along with Bernie have moved people who agree with Bernie on healthcare, on climate change policies, on ending mass incarceration, on ending all kinds of things, some of which Biden has moved with him on because they've worked together. The relationship between Sanders and Biden as a reasonable friendship, a good friendship, because this is what Biden does, cannot be overstated, the importance of this that Clinton and Sanders never had. Back when Sanders moved into the Senate after being a member of the House of Representatives for about a decade in Vermont, Biden was one of the folks who welcomed him in and got to know him, and they've stayed friends. And Bernie is a bit of a one man on an island kind of experience in the Senate. He's not beloved by his colleagues. They don't despise him, but his positions are, you know, he's a socialist, and those positions are not mainstream in the U.S. Congress. But Biden has been close to him, and they've been friends, and that has meant a great deal. And they built task forces together that talked about policies, and I have seen Biden, you know, definitely moving towards Bernie and Elizabeth Warren's positions in some significant ways. As a result of this, some of the folks who might have been less inclined to get behind Biden in this election have come in ways they did not for Clinton in 2016. Certainly accelerating that is Trump and the horribleness of Trump and the very real recognition of how devastating he is for the world, for America, for people of color, for young voters. So a couple data points. One, young voters are turning out in this election in significant ways. We have larger percentages of young vote turnout, by young, I mean under 30, in all of the battleground states than we did in 2016. And it's still early, but but they're turning out significantly. Second, they are overwhelmingly supporting Joe Biden. A Harvard poll came out yesterday of young voters. They're the experts on young voters, or one of the experts on young voters in this country. Shows that young voters, people under 25 in this case, are voting for Biden about low 60s, so like 62%, to low 20s, about 40% of a gap. So 62 to 23, I think. That's enormous. It's way bigger than Clinton got. And it's Obama-esque numbers. Yeah. And then third, you have the most important voice among young voters in this country today, who has been very outspoken on behalf of Joe Biden in ways that I so appreciate and respect for what she's doing and how she's contributing.
Be completely candid, Vice President Biden's position on the issue of fracking has been confusing. During the primary, he sounded supportive of a ban. On Saturday, he told voters in Pennsylvania, quote, "I'm not banning fracking, period." It sounds like now he's on the other side of this issue from you. Does it bother you?
You know, it does not bother me. I believe, and I have a very strong position on fracking. You know, the science is very clear. The methane emissions from fracking are up to 64 times more powerful than CO2 emissions at trapping heat in the air. And just from a perspective of stopping climate change, you know, there is a scientific consensus. However, that is my view. Vice President Biden has made very clear that he does not agree with a fracking ban. And I consider that, it will be a privilege to lobby him should we win the White House, but we need to focus on winning the White House first. And I'm happy to make my case, but I also understand that he is in disagreement on that issue.
Do you worry that his opposition to a fracking ban is going to hurt young voter turnout?
Well, you know, I believe that young people right now have a very disciplined activist mindset, and they are not here with the intent of voting for their favorite person or voting for, someone that they think is perfect as president. I think young people are actually quite disciplined and quite realistic and pragmatic in their vote, and they want to vote for who they are going to lobby. Right now, young people are so clear on their stances on many political issues that they believe that they want to vote for a president that is at least going to be receptive to their advocacy, activism, and protest, frankly. And so, you know, there is no question that Joe Biden is a much better person in that position to be receptive and actually listen to the voices of advocates than Donald Trump, who is intensely focused on enriching himself and his friends.
I think what's interesting about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's whole approach is the pragmatic intelligence of what she says. You know, you listen to her get beat up by the right-wing media and you forget that when she speaks, she is a person who has life experiences, you know, a working person, but a person who has been very mature. I mean, hate to use it because it sounds condescending, but very, like, you know, well, let's say pragmatic in her politics and able to articulate it so well. And I just think she's representative of that voting bloc, isn't she?
Well, she absolutely is. She endorsed Bernie Sanders early on. She is wise. She is strong. I tweeted this yesterday. She is a leader. She's a team player. She is the next generation of the Bernie Sanders left, and she's better politically than Sanders is. She's so just smart. She did two things in that clip right there, which was Sunday morning on CNN with Jake Tapper. She did two things. One, she said, yeah, I'm against fracking. I am. I'm very clear on this, she said. Then she said, secondly, and I'm supporting Joe Biden. I am ready to lobby Joe Biden. I want the privilege to lobby Joe Biden. That is so good. That is so good. We got to be able to have the clear positions and also the calibrations that are necessary, the compromises that are necessary in American politics. So Ocasio-Cortez, who I just have so much respect for, is going to be leading us for a long time. And she's leading us right now. She is bringing and signaling to folks who agree with her that Biden is the choice. And there's not, there isn't even like a waffling on it. There isn't a deep, deep, deep reluctance. There is a, I'm voting for this guy, and there's no doubt in my mind he's the better choice. That kind of reality from Ocasio-Cortez, you just didn't see anybody in an equivalent position to her doing that on behalf of Clinton in 2016. They were skeptical, doubtful, and Clinton really suffered from that. Folks who agreed with Ocasio-Cortez and Sanders either really held their nose and voted for Clinton, or voted for Trump, or voted for Stein, or didn't vote. And three out of those four outcomes were bad for the Democratic ticket. In this case, all of those voters are coming back to the Democrats. It's going to be a real battle over policy for the Biden administration if we get there, when we get there. But that's for the later day. Right now, the job at hand is the election.
There's nothing like a president and an administration whose approach is not about listening, but about and not about following the norms of politics, like, you know, believing in environmental rules or science or allowing the other side to at least have a voice and seeing the consequences of that to galvanize people, to mature people. I was thinking about the percentage in the population of those young voters. They're ever increasing, right? As the yep. as the 80 plus and even the baby boomers decline, that percentage of the population of voters is growing in great numbers right now.
Yeah, so as we wrap up this podcast episode, let's set aside the fears and the concerns that young voters aren't gonna come out. They're coming out. They are not only that, they're leading the way. They are strongly voting for Joe Biden. And there will be a lot of policy discussions to come. And that's what a robust democracy is all about. The ability to have those conversations and then to do something about it. So I am appreciative. I am grateful. I am proud of the way in which folks who didn't get their candidate, and I'm one of them, are getting out behind Biden and getting out behind the Democrats in the Senate races in these states. I walk, as you know, each morning. I'm doing it right now. And one of the signs that I walk past each day is a home that has a sign. It is a home that has a sign in the front that says, Bernie Sanders supporter voting for Biden. And I assume that this is not an uncommon sign nationally, but it's one that I haven't seen. And that's what we all need to do. There's a choice on the ballot, and it's not Biden versus Trump. It's democracy versus the death of American democracy. So we're in, we're going. We got 9 days to go to get this done. You know what time it is, Steve?